swing and a drive. Right field and deep. Back goes Aquino. It's got a chance. Gone. Get out the tape measure. Long gone.
Fly the W!
Cubs fans, it's time to fly the W with Dustin Rhodes and Paul Crawley Jean.
You are listening to the Fly the W 670 podcast, season 3, episode 75, The Nail in the 24 Cubs Coffin. Don't forget to listen, download, review, and most importantly, subscribe to the podcast. Follow on the socials, Fly the W 670 on Twitter, Instagram, Fly the W on Facebook, email Crawley and I, flythew670@gmail.com. Well, we both thought the Cubs were going to sweep Crawley, and somehow, some way, they were at least able to get one game, and that was this afternoon, Sunday. But rough couple of nights out in Colorado for our favorite baseball team.
You know, Dustin, after watching that Dodgers series, you said, okay, you know, you took two or three from one of the best teams in baseball. You're coming into Colorado, sweep like we wanted, and then see where it goes. There's nothing you could do at this point but hope that other teams help you, et cetera, et cetera. But this really, I mean, you're running out of time. And to lose two out of three to the Rockies the way that they did, I don't know if there's a chance for them to be able to bounce back after that.
Right. Really tough. Really, really tough. Let's recap it for everybody. We'll go back a little bit to Friday night. Javier Assad was the game one pitcher for the Cubs in the series.
Yeah. Javier Assad versus Austin Gomber, and start out good for the Cubs. Ian Happ's going to walk. Dansby Swanson doubles, and with runners at second and third and one out, Cody Bellinger hits a two-run single. So that's a 2-0 lead. But that wouldn't last long. And you'd see that a lot in this entire series. Every time the Cubs would get a run or two, the Rockies would be right back. So bottom of the second, Ryan McMahon singles and Brandon Robert Rogers doubles to cut the Cubs lead to 2-1. Assad would get Michael Toglia to ground out and Nolan Jones to strike out. But Hunter Goodman, remember that name, he homers. And now the Cubs trail 3-2. Cubs had a chance to get a run or two in the fourth inning. Michael Bush and Nico Horner hit back-to-back singles. PCA strikes out. Then Miguel Amaya hitting the first of three Cubs double plays in the game. Colorado would add on in the bottom of the inning. Michael Toglia singles, steals second, and scores on a Hunter Goodman single. There he is again to give the Cubs a 4-2 lead. Both starters would pitch six innings. Assad gave up four runs on seven hits with three walks and five Ks. Austin Gomber gave up two runs on nine hits with one walk and four Ks in his six innings of work. Ethan Roberts first out of the pen for the Cubs in the seventh. He gives up a solo home run to Ezekiel Tovar to make it a 5-2 game. Top of the eighth, Victor Vodnik on the mound. Cody Bellinger and Isak Paredes hit back-to-back singles. And then Michael, head to the mountains of Busch beer, launches one into the Colorado Rockies, a three-run blast. We have a tie ball game. Coors Field is filled with Cub fans, as it always is, and they're going nuts. But that euphoria would wear off shortly. Drew Smyly comes into the game and gives up a single to Ryan McMahon. Walks Brendan Rodgers and gives up a single to Michael Toglia. Bases are loaded with no outs. Smyly strikes out Nolan Jones for the first out of the inning, and counsel goes to Nate Pearson, who had been pretty reliable for Craig. But he gives up a grand slam to, here we go again, Hunter Goodman. Rockies go up 9-5. That would be the final as the Cubs go down in order in the ninth. Dustin, Hunter Goodman came into the game hitting under 190. Hitting under 190. He went 3-for-4 with two home runs and seven RBIs. But in something else, Dustin, that we're going to talk about, every game this series, just the amount of runners left on base. The Cubs had a whopping 13 hits and scored five runs.
You can't do that.
Right. 2-for-10 with runners in scoring position. They left seven men on base. Nico had an error. Amaya, Suzuki, Talkman all grounded into double plays. And all four pitchers that appeared in the game for the Cubs gave up runs. Amaya gave up four. Roberts gave up one. Smyly was charged with three. And Pearson won with the Goodman Grand Slam. Not only did the Cubs lose, but the Mets and Atlanta both won. And the Cubs were now six games back in the wild card with 15 left to play. I mean, that was just brutal.
Then brutal. Let's get to game two. Even more brutal, if you want to be honest. Jameson Taillon started this one.
Yep, versus Kyle Freeland. Once again, Seiya Suzuki get the Cubs on the board early. With one out in the bottom of the first, Dansby singled and scored on a Suzuki double. Top of the fourth, Cody Bellinger. He's getting hot. He's hitting a solo home run, and the Cubs are up 2-0. Jameson Taillon was pitching a gem. The Rocks finally got to him in the bottom of the sixth. Aaron Shunk and Charlie Blackman hit back-to-back singles to lead off the inning. Shunk would advance to third when Ezekiel Tovar flew out to center and then scored on a Brenton Doyle sack fly that cut the Cubs' lead to 2-1. Cubs will get that run back in the top of the seventh, PCA with his 9th home run of the season to make it a 3-1 ball game. But bottom of the seventh, Michael Toglia answers with a solo home run of his own. And the next batter, Jake Cave, would double, and Tyone's night was through. He pitched 6 innings, gave up 2 runs on 5 hits, 1 walk, and 6 Ks. Tyson Miller would come in to finish up the evening. But, you know, Dustin, after just such a tough August for Jameson Taillon, I mean, this September, in 3 starts, he's got an ERA of 1.42, a whip of 0.89. He only has allowed 1 home run, 19 innings, 3 quality starts. I mean, he's been doing everything you could ask, and he kept the Cubs in this game.
Yeah, he definitely did.
And so the Cubs would get that run back in the top of the eighth. Cody Bellinger and Isaac Paredes hit back-to-back singles to put runners at the corner. Michael Bush hits a sack fly to put the Cubs back up by 2. Rockies won't go away. Bottom of the eighth, Charlie Blackman doubles, advances to third on an Ezekiel Tovar flyout, and scores on a Brenton Doyle sack fly. Back to a one-run ball game. Top of the ninth, PCA is up to bat. He gets drilled by a pitch by Jaden Hill. Dustin, that was retaliation for Pete slowly jogging around earlier. But that bothers me. You don't do that. And what bothered me is I didn't see a lot of fire from the dugout, from the Cubs dugout.
Right. Almost
that's
like
your teammate.
Yeah, that's your teammate. Whether you agree with it or not, still your teammate.
So if you want to put Pete at first, fine, go ahead. He'll steal second, which is what he does. He scores on an Ian Happ single to give the Cubs an insurance run. 2-run lead again, 5-3 going into the ninth. Porter Hodrich is into the game. He strikes out Michael Toglia, strikes out Jake Cave, and it looks like he strikes out Hunter Goodman on a check swing strike. But the Cubs do not get the call. Goodman takes the walk. That gave pinch hitter Sam Hilliard a chance, and he made the most of it, a 2-run blast to tie the game at 5. Top of the 10th, Cody Bellinger is the Manfred man. Isaac Paredes and Michael Bush would strike out, and Nico Horner would fly out. Now the Rockies have a chance to walk it off. Bottom of the 10th, Aaron Shunk is the Manfred man for Colorado. Drew Smyly takes the mound. Charlie Blackman grounds out to move Shunk to third. Smyly would walk Ezekiel Tovar to set up the double play. It doesn't happen as Brenton Doyle singles to left. And for the first time in 10 innings, the Rockies get the lead and walk it off 6-5. I mean, Dustin, that was the second home run Hodges allowed in 35 appearances. It just always... this stuff always happens at the worst possible
right.
time.
They were a strike away from putting this to bed, right? And again, I think that was the 27th one-run loss of the season at that point. 27 one-run losses.
And again, I mean, you know, unfortunately, that call could have come either way. But guess what, Dustin? They scored 5 runs on 11 hits, but were 2-for-12 with runners in scoring position and left 9 on base.
Right. That's not a playoff caliber offense. That's not
right. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to sit there and worry about check swing calls. And if he would have just scored a couple more runs, you know, it wouldn't have been the end of the game.
Right. They had every opportunity. That's why, again, I think as bad as things were on Friday night, Saturday night, even worse. So that takes us to Sunday, which is when you and I are recording this. And Kyle Hendricks was given the ball.
Yep. Once again, runners in scoring position, Dustin. We get into the first inning, bases loaded, 2 outs. Michael Bush grounds out. 2 outs in the second, Cubs draw 2 walks, but Dansby Swanson pops out to end the threat. They finally do break through in the third, 1 out, Bellinger and Paredes walk. Michael Bush hits a single to score Bellinger, and Nico singles to score Paredes. Cubs are up 2-0. PCA walked to load the bases, but Miguel Amaya struck out, and Ian Happ took one to straightaway center, and Brenton Doyle timed it perfectly, took away a possible grand slam. At the very least, he would have cleared the bases. Instead, Happ hit it 423 feet. That is the longest out of the season this year in baseball.
Yeah. Crushed that ball. Yep. Absolutely crushed.
Once again, though, the Rockies would strike back. First batter in the bottom of the inning, Jacob Stallings homers to left to make it 2-1. That home run, though, Dustin, was the only blemish on Kyle's day. He pitched 6 innings, gave up 1 run on 2 hits with 3 walks and 7 Ks. I mean, you can't ask. I mean, you're talking about at Coors Field, right? You can't ask for a better start from Kyle.
No, it was great, great performance by him.
1 run on 2 hits, 3 walks, and 7 Ks. Cal Quantrill only pitched 2 1/3 innings and gave up 2 runs, but the Rockies' bullpen, for the most part, kept the Cubs kind of locked in there. But – They did give up one run, a Michael Busch solo home run in the seventh to give the Cubs a 3-1 lead. Busch would hit another solo home run in the ninth, his second of the day and his 20th of the season. The Cubs, a little insurance, right? A 4-1 lead, and that is Michael Busch's first multi-homer game. Then Nico would double, and PCA hit a two-run blast, two homers and two consecutive games for Pete. Cubs lead 6-1, and when he went around the bases, it was the exact same as he did the other day when they plunked him. Good thing about it being the ninth, he couldn't get plunked again. But hey, let's try to keep that in the memory banks for next season, Dustin, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Now, 6-1 lead, you're going to assume that's safe, right?
You would think. You would hope.
It's so ironic, Dustin, that the thing that has killed this team, you know, from the beginning, the bullpen, and then all of a sudden they kind of got that bullpen figured out, and then all of this week it just has been just kind of falling apart here. Keegan Thompson comes in and walks the bases loaded with no outs. 6-1, and you're walking the bases loaded.
Yeah, I mean. I was getting all kinds of texts.
Field. I mean, like, it's one thing to walk the bases loaded wherever. Let's say in Oakland, in the Coliseum, where it's a gigantic, you know, that's what they do in Colorado. They hit home runs. Luckily, Tyson Miller comes in. He gives up a run on a ground out and strikes out the next two batters. He gets his first career save, and the Cubs win 6-2. And, Dustin, we should be at least happy about that. But I'm sitting there, and I take a look again. They scored 6 runs, right? But they had 11 hits and they drew 12 walks.
That's crazy. You're talking about
23 base runners and you only got 6 runs.
Mm-hmm.
3-for-14 with runners in scoring position. They left 16 men on base. Dustin, if the last batter would have walked, right? If Miller walks that last batter, the tying run would have been at home plate. And everyone would have been mad because Tyson Miller gave up a grand slam, blah, blah, blah. But again, 16 men left on base. How do you do that? I have no clue.
Inexcusable. These are why there will be changes in the offseason.
You sit there and it just, I thought about it this weekend. I sat there and I said to myself, if you remember last year, the Cubs looked like they were in really good chances to make a playoff, the playoffs last year. And they blew a series at home against Pittsburgh. And then they blew a series at the road on Colorado. Now, I know they lost a couple series to Arizona. Arizona went to the World Series. I don't mind losing to teams like that get hot at the right time. But you're telling me you couldn't win the home series this year against Pittsburgh, and you blew two games here in Colorado. I mean, inexcusable for a team that is trying to make a playoff push. I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe somehow the baseball gods look favorably and the Cubs get lucky. I just feel like losing the two games, especially that really was the nail in the Cubs' coffin for this.
Right. I think they could have lost one and we could have still been upset about it. And you feel a lot better right now if it was still 5 instead of 5.5. But, you know, again, that's baseball. That's why they play. And we will keep following them throughout. This is the Fly the W670 podcast, episode 75 of season number 3. Don't forget to drop Crawley and I a 5-star review. You can also email us, flythew670@gmail.com. And don't forget, you can watch us, that's right, on the 670 The Score YouTube page. In this segment, Crawley's talking to Matthew Trueblood of Northside Baseball to discuss his article on the possibility of Cody Bellinger opting out. What will Cody decide to do? Crawley and Matt discuss it next.
Joining me now on the Fly the W podcast, I'm happy to have on our friend from Northside Baseball, Matt Trueblood. Matt, how are you doing today?
Doing great. How are you?
Not so great. I'm sitting here looking at this, and it's like, what did Yogi Berra say? Deja vu all over again. Didn't the Cubs completely tank a home series against Pittsburgh last season and then tank a series against the Rockies in Colorado last year as well?
Yeah, if they could break this cycle of going to play one of the consistently worst teams in the National League every September and having their mediocrity affirmed by struggling to beat the Rockies, that would be great.
Man, and not only that, they've just been brutal losses. And so, you know, the dirt is pretty fresh. I mean, obviously, what are the odds now? 0.0? Are we now in the 0.0 category? It's got to be getting close to that, right? Because I know they were at like 2% for a little bit, but it has to be getting down. And now it's kind of the time where you're going to kind of take a look at this. 0.1%. I'm taking a look at it. But we're getting the time where we have to kind of start looking forward. And you wrote an article over at Northside Baseball about the possibility of Cody Bellinger opting out. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think, I've been sort of out on a limb the last couple of months in saying that I thought there was almost no chance he would opt out. And that's actually been in friction with a lot of the national pundits, the sort of newsmakers, the people who are a little more connected to Scott Boras specifically and his world, were suggesting it was likely he would opt out all along. To me, looking at the numbers, that just didn't make any sense, especially when he would sort of come back off the injured list where he's been a couple of times this year and be inconsistent, or it looked like he was, he's playing through stuff, which is admirable, but not playing through stuff especially well. Well, it is very hard to justify heading back out to the market where you're not sure if people are going to judge you as full and healthy or as sort of damaged goods. And just having had a winter where the market you hoped for didn't really materialize, and he'd be leaving not only $30 million on the table for 2025, but then that option to opt into another $20 million in 2026, that's a lot of flexibility for the player. It's a very player-friendly deal. And so to me, it didn't make sense for them to even be heavily considering him opting out. But he's gotten really hot lately. The last couple of weeks have looked good. Some of that is hot ballparks, the ball flying at Coors Field, all of that. But he's made some material adjustments too, and it looks like his swing's coming back to him a little bit after that finger injury that hampered him in the late summer. And so you can make a little more of a case now if you believe that the qualifying offer held him back last winter, if you believe that he's still a center fielder, which I don't, but I think there, Scott Boras might believe that he just has to get one owner or one front office to buy into him as a center fielder. And then he does sort of play at that level in the market. And they may just prefer to go for the long-term deal now, as opposed to, even though the annual average value of that would probably be lower, as opposed to sticking with this deal that would pay him $50 million at the most over the next 2 years. That's pretty comfortable, but it's a lower upside, because on the other side of that, he'll be 31, probably doesn't have a long-term deal waiting. So they may try to capitalize.
And for our listeners out there, describe what you mean by the qualifying offer hampering him last season.
Yeah, so when the Dodgers non-tendered him, remember, he still had a year of team control left if they had wanted it after the 2022 season. They elected to let him go, and the Cubs signed him for $17 million for 2023. Then after the season, they offered him the qualifying offer, which meant any other team who signed him was going to have to give up draft picks and a little bit of their bonus allotments for signing international free agents, basically those Latin teenagers, in order to bring in Bellinger. For guys who are truly elite, when Juan Soto goes out to the market this year, last year with Shohei Ohtani, that qualifying offer doesn't slow teams down. But Bellinger belongs to this sort of second tier of free agents where that can be a real drag on the market. And I think a lot of the players, especially the Boras had out there last year, felt like it was part of, maybe not all of, certainly not all of, but part of what was sort of dragging down their market, making it harder for them to find the long-term deals they were after. This year, the Cubs can't offer him that qualifying offer again. You can only get that once during your career under the collective bargaining agreement. So now Bellinger will be a truly untethered free agent if he does opt out at the end of this year. There's upside there, but a lot of the facts on the ground haven't changed. So it loosens up his market a little, but it doesn't change the player who's up for grabs.
And when you talk about center fielder, Boras could argue that his flexibility makes him more valuable, that he could play center, could play right, could play first base, and he's been a team player in doing so.
Yeah, and I think people like Bellinger as a clubhouse presence. I do think, he's a pretty fine first baseman. The Cubs, this is one way in which I think they've emphasized player development this year, was they gave those keys to Michael Busch and they said, this is going to be your job. They played Bellinger a bit there early in the year when they were protecting Busch from some platoon matchups and kind of working him in gradually. but I don't think they ever intended to have him play very much there this year. To me, that's his best defensive position. If they can sell someone on the idea that he's a center fielder, obviously up the middle defender, that takes pressure off the bat in terms of creating overall value. And so they're going to try and market him that way. But like you said, the versatility too, and that's where he might have the most value to the Cubs, whether he opts in or they would possibly explore bringing him back on a different structured deal after he opts out. It would be as that guy who sort of floats between designated hitter, right field, center field, maybe some left, depending on what team he lands with. And then again, first base, he's a really fine defender there. So he's not without value. It's just not a traditional player profile at this point in his career.
And, you know, I remember last offseason sitting there going like, okay, Stroman's back. There's no way he's going to opt out because he was injured most of the season and he's going to be, no one's going to pay him what he wants, but he did, he opted out. And you know, that's like you said, age plays a factor. You know, no one wants to give a guy past 30, 31, a big long-term contract. I mean, I think the Cubs, I think Stroman's a good case study to look into that. Even when you don't think he may opt out, like I said, Stroman was an all-star in the first half, but really didn't play, was injured. When he came back, was ineffective in the second half. I mean, it does set precedence, and I think that Scott Boras is chomping at the bit to get Cody back out on the market.
Yeah, I agree with you. Stroman surprised me last fall, too, and that one's been living in my head a little bit. I think that was a surprising move, and it's reflective of, more broadly, guys like to opt out and head back to free agency at when they get those opt-out opportunities. If it's a 50-50 call, they tend to lean toward that opt-out, figuring they can probably get back basically the deal they're leaving on the table if they opt out. The exception being when there's a big chunk on the other side of the opt-out, like with Javier Baez last winter, right? I still think, you know, but you're right about Boras too. There's a dynamic there of, he's going to kind of want to redeem himself from what was a pretty rough winter for some of his top clients last year. And part of that is, you know, he already got a really handsome extension for Matt Chapman, who had signed a similar deal to what Bellinger did with the Giants. Well, they signed a rare September extension for 6 years and $150 million. The Cubs and Bellinger are not in a position to do a deal like that. So Boras is going to have a little more, he's going to need to have a little more appetite for risk here. And the big question is, are he and Bellinger so much on the same page that Bellinger would say, yes, I trust you, go ahead and try and get me another, you know, a long-term deal, the one that didn't materialize for us last year? And then will he trust him to know that the fallback is going to be there of a similar deal to the one that he'd be leaving on the table if he does opt out? Because I think from the player perspective, I would like that flexibility a lot. I would like the very high annual average value. And I might think I could put together a better platform year than this one has been for Bellinger. But again, some of that depends on how he finishes over these last couple of weeks. He's really put together a strong first half of September. If it's a really strong final month, there's some momentum there that teams might notice.
And, you know, in a piece in The Athletic last week, I know that Patrick Mooney put out, they asked Cody about it, and he said, I told Boras that I don't even want to think about it. Right now, I really just want to play the game that I know I can play. I want to end the season strong. How much do you think that finger injury played as far as the season that Cody had?
I think injuries have been the story sort of running underneath Cody Bellinger's career arc for half a decade now. He's dealt with some stuff. And, you know, there was that famous play where he seemed to injure his shoulder celebrating a massive home run in the 2020 playoffs. That, I think, ended up actually getting a little bit oversold, but people didn't notice quite how devastating and lingering a knee injury he suffered in the outfield the following year turned out to be. And then he had another knee injury in 2023 when he was playing center and for the Cubs and went out to try and make a catch in Houston. He had cracked ribs earlier this year from a collision with the wall at Wrigley. He had the finger issue. I think when Cody Bellinger is playing at a full level of health, just everything's feeling good, he can still be very much that player, you know, who won an MVP in 2019, who went on just a torrid run for them in the middle of last year. But I also think he's going to continue to rack up these little dings. And sometimes they're more than little dings, and he's really being tough just by being out there. But when he is, you also see him be diminished. He's not one of those guys who can just play right through a nagging finger injury and it's going to look exactly the same. He gives up some serious power. He loses something by making himself get back out there early or by playing through something that might put someone else on the shelf. It's admirable, but it also, you know, just because it's admirable doesn't mean it's necessarily advisable. I do think we've seen enough from him now to say, when he's not fully right, you're going to know it. And he's going to play at 80% for you. He's tough that way. But it's also going to be 80% of his value. And maybe that's not always a good thing.
Now, Scott Boras, we know, is nothing if not the wordsmith. And when Scott met with Cody in the series with the Dodgers recently, he said, Wrigley Field is unexplainable. The Farmer's Almanac applies to Wrigley Field. It didn't rain. The crops didn't grow. Wrigley Field had the most unusual season. It's been an offensive drought. And he doesn't say, I know it sounds kind of like bombastic and all that stuff, but he doesn't say these things without having the research to back it. Mm-hmm. And so StatCast is saying that in terms of hitter-friendly stadiums, Wrigley's near the bottom. And I guess there'll probably be time to dig through that. But, I mean, that may have an impact on Cody as well. And I didn't have a chance to look at these splits, home versus away. But, again, something else that possibly could work into his favor.
Yeah. The problem there is you have to find somebody to sell that narrative to. And I think that used to be a lot easier for Boras when, again, his big play for years and years was to kind of make an end run around a front office, get in an owner's ear, and talk about how this player's transformational for your organization. They're going to mean big business dollars to you. And so let's make a deal. And that kind of story, the one about, you know, Wrigley had this weird offensive, and it's all true. I think Boras is far from the only person who said it. Wrigley has had a fluky, strange kind of season. But at the same time, front offices don't set a lot of store by one-year park factors, and they're right not to. And Wrigley may have been fluky and may have been tough on offense this year, and that doesn't necessarily mean that Cody Bellinger only having 42 extra base hits and 520 plate appearances to this point this year is all about Wrigley Field. It is not. And what teams do look at a lot more closely than home-away splits or expected home runs, you know, that section on the Baseball Savant page where it's, the guy had this many actual homers, but he'd have had this many if he played all his games at this park. Teams aren't looking at that. That's a toy for fans. What teams are looking at is batted ball data. You know, the real granular quality of your batted balls and your contact rate and all that stuff. And Cody manages the strike zone pretty well. He makes a lot of contact that isn't of an especially high quality. And he's already playing for one of the teams in the league who's most willing to sort of value that idiosyncratic contact. Other teams are much more stringent about, I want to see you barreling the ball. I want to see you meeting it consistently, and I don't want to see you chasing outside the zone too much. I think they're going to run into those same problems if they go out on the open market again that they have in the past, because teams aren't willing to just buy every narrative that Scott Boras would like to tell them. They're not willing to just say this guy's an outlier unless there's a little more consistent sort of demonstrative value in that outlier ability. Again, doesn't mean they won't opt out. And I think there's a chance they will. And I think there's a chance that it'll pay off. But if I were advising Cody Bellinger, I'd tell him to stick with this contract. And if he doesn't, unfortunately for him, I think he could be in for another one of those sort of long, quiet, frustrating winters.
Now, you know, the thing that always blew my mind was the extension for Ian Happ, especially knowing the amount of outfield prospects that the Cubs had in the system that helped drive it to be one of the top farm systems in baseball. And, you know, the question then is, let's say hypothetically, I mean, Ian Happ's not going anywhere. Seiya Suzuki is not going anywhere. And, you know, Cody Bellinger is the only one that could possibly go. Let's say he does opt out. Do you see the Cubs trying to sign maybe, I don't know, I don't think they would say, I think, you know, they're already cutting scouts there. There's friction in the front office, supposedly. You know, I don't see them going for a Juan Soto type deal. That to me doesn't seem realistic, but you know, maybe like some sort of stopgap until Owen Casey is ready.
Yeah, I think they have to make an external upgrade to the lineup. There has to be another big bat coming in. And I agree, it's not going to be Juan Soto. I'll just say that flatly. If Jed Hoyer is still in charge of this team after the end of this year, which I would expect he will be, Juan Soto is not coming to the Cubs. Forget about it. But they do have to add a big bat. Now, what that looks like and what counts as a big bat to them versus what we might perceive it to be from the outside, it depends on a lot of factors. If Bellinger opts out, you have a little flexibility because you could always put, say, a Suzuki back in right field instead of at DH. Suzuki's had his defensive issues out there, so that would raise its own problems, but it's an option. And then you can explore bringing in someone like a Pete Alonso at the more expensive and kind of risky end, or a really interesting option that I know they've had some discussions about when he was more on the trade block a couple of years ago, is Anthony Santander of the Orioles, who's poised to hit free agency. There are going to be some big bats out there. The fits aren't necessarily going to be perfect. And then it's a matter of, do they want to pony up some prospect capital to go trade for a young, controllable player at a position where they do already have a clear need? Or do they want to sign a player who might not be a perfect fit, might create some uncomfortable competitions in camp, and then maybe have to trust Craig Counsell to sort through that? You have to trust that you're going to be able to evaluate talent well enough to say, this is the lineup that's going to actually score runs for us, and you might have to make a trade out of spring training to put somebody else on a team where they're going to have more success and just move pieces around that way. But they cannot go through this winter and not add someone who makes a big offensive impact from outside the current organization. Can't do it. These prospects that they have are not good enough. And the lineup that they currently, you know, they've been running out there for 2 years straight now, it's not good enough.
Well, you've given us a lot of food for thought, Matt. Matt, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find your work and where they can find you on the socials?
Key place is northsidebaseball.com. And it's not just me there. We've got a growing staff of writers excited about the things we're going to do, not only through the end of the season here, but into the off season as well. Anything I write, meanwhile, you can find at MA Trueblood on Twitter. And yeah, those are the main spots.
All right, Matt, we're going to be watching this offseason, and we'll see what happens with Cody. It'll be an interesting offseason, I'll tell you that much.
Thanks.
This is Season 3, Episode 75, The Nail in the Cubs 24 Coffin. Oh, Crowley, I hate to say it. Don't forget to listen, download, review, subscribe to the Fly the W podcast. Leave us a five-star review. You can also email us at flythew670@gmail.com. And don't forget, you can watch us on the 670 The Score YouTube page. So after dropping 2 out of 3, Crowley, how do things look in the standings? I referenced it a couple of minutes ago.
Yep. The Cubs are in second place, 10 and a half back, followed by the Cardinals, who are scuffling, the Reds, and then Pittsburgh. When we look at the wild card, and you were talking about this a little bit, the worst part of this is that, like, some of these teams are starting to come down to earth. When you look at the
Mets have lost 2 in a row, right?
Right. You just had a chance to make some noise and you didn't. So the Cubs are 5.5 back. The Cardinals are 7.5 and the Reds are 9.5. So, you know, the Braves and the Mets really have to play each other still. And who knows, but you just, you know, every time we think that there's a chance, they do something to kind of shoot themselves in the foot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we talk about some Cubs news happening, congrats to Patrick Wisdom. He was named the Cubs nominee for the Roberto Clemente Award. This is a picture from my guy, Scotty Changone, @ScottyChags. You could see he got to wear it. It has a special patch for Patrick Wisdom being the nominee. That's given to a player that talks about character, charity, doing work in the community, everything that Roberto Clemente represented, which is today, when we record on Sunday, is Roberto Clemente Day. So I've gotten to know Patrick. I've interviewed him a couple times. He's been on this podcast. I interviewed him on a rooftop at Wrigley. He's been with Club 400 numerous occasions. He cannot be a nicer guy, a better a better person and just a real asset to the Cubs community. I'm glad he got the recognition. So cheers to Patrick on that one.
Yep, good for him. That's awesome.
Now, I warned everyone about this, Dustin, and I know Crawley sometimes can get a little on a soapbox, and I said, logos, I hate the jersey logos, and everyone's like, it did happen, it's not a big deal, blah, 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 blah. But remember, Dustin, I warned you. I warned you about this. I said that it's not going to stop with one patch. Well, guess what happened this weekend? MLB announced that all teams will wear the Strauss Ostrich logo on team batting helmets in the postseason, World Series, and in all minor league baseball games through 2027. And if you're looking on the YouTube channel, here it is right here, the Strauss logo on all the helmets. I warned you guys, man. That's all. I don't want to say I told you so, but they're going to be looking like NASCAR drivers by the time this is all over. This is garbage.
And do we know how much baseball is getting for this?
I got no idea how much baseball is getting. I'm sure they're getting a pretty penny, and I hope it's worth it to completely just desecrate these uniforms.
Desecrate, Dustin.
These uniforms. We went 1876 is when baseball started. No patches on helmets and garbage like that. No patches on uniforms. Just ruining it, man. It's just for the almighty dollar. One more time. One more dollar that you got to squeeze out of it, and you can't let us have anything nice.
All right, let's get to some good news. Justin Steele had a nice outing in a side session. He's with the team in Colorado.
Yep, he threw 40 pitches during a bullpen session on Saturday. He said, quote, "It was a really good day. Biggest thing is just having the relief of throwing and not feeling anything. That's just a sigh of relief and weight off my shoulders." The Cubs hope to activate him during the upcoming homestand, most likely on Wednesday. My question, Dustin, is why?
Well, I think if you take the first two games from the A's, and then I think you activate him. Otherwise, I think you shut him down. You say shut him down now?
I don't see any true benefit of doing this other than risk of injury, to be honest.
All right. And Julian Merriweather was with the iCubs.
Yep. Threw 20 pitches on Friday. So he's getting a little game action now. We'll see what happens with that. And so we talked about Justin maybe getting activated for Oakland. And you remember, Dustin, last season, the Oakland A's were one of the worst teams in baseball history. They finished in last place in the AL Central with a record of 50-112. The Cubs did sweep Oakland last season. They won game 1, 10-1, as A. Hayden Wesniski picked up the win. Game 2 was closer, with the Cubs winning a 4-0 game, but the Cubs finished the sweep with a 12-2 victory behind Justin Steele. And so this offseason, with all the work they had to do, the A's didn't do much. They let James Caprianis leave, reliever Trevor May leave, and former Cub infielder, outfielder Tony Kemp is gone. They did add a couple of starting pitchers in the offseason, Alex Wood and Ross Stripling, and third baseman J.D. Davis. Now, when we look at this year, the story of the 2024 A's has little to do with what's going on the field and more on what's going off the field. Owner John Fisher has been working to move the A's out of Oakland and to Las Vegas. The whole process has been a mess. Fans have been boycotting. The owners have approved the A's relocation to Vegas. So this is the last season for the A's in Oakland. They will then move to Sacramento to start the 2025 season in the San Francisco Giants AAA park. Fans, you know, like I said, are rightly upset, but the A's have been playing better this season. They have some young talent developing, like Lawrence Butler and Brent Rooker, some interesting young players. They did trade a couple of pitchers at the trade deadline, starter Paul Blackburn and reliever Lucas Erick. And they currently have a record of 65-85, fourth in the AL West ahead of the Angels. Dustin, they played the White Sox this weekend, but they lost 2 out of 3 to the Southsiders, if you can believe that.
Yeah, that's crazy. I did track that. I was surprised to see that. And the A's are kind of taking up residency here in town with a whole week of Chicago. So I'm sure they're enjoying that. All right, so let's take a look at the tail of the tape, shall we?
When you take a look at this right here, the Cubs have a better batting average than the A's, 241, which is 17th in baseball compared to 234 for the A's. Slug, the advantage goes to the A's, 398, which is 14th versus 395 for the Cubs, which is 17th. Runners in scoring position, the Cubs are 22nd with 243, while the A's are 24th with 232. When you look at starting pitcher ERA, the Cubs are 8th with 384, while the A's are 25th with 458. Reliever ERA is pretty close. The Cubs are a little bit better. They fell down to 12th at 382 after this weekend, while the A's are 14th at 394. But the huge disparity is in defense. The Cubs are actually playing really good defense. They have 36 defensive runs. They're the seventh best team in baseball defensively. But the A's are negative 54, 29th in all baseball. Awful.
Terrible. That is so bad. That is so bad. All right. So Monday night over at the Federal Landmark, Shota Imanaga.
Showtime against Joey Estes at 6:40 p.m. Remember that we've switched to those 6:40 starts. Shota's 13-3 with a 3.03 ERA in 27 games started with 159 strikeouts and 116 at third innings. On August 30th, Imanaga gave up three runs in six innings against the Nationals. On September 4th, he pitched seven shutout innings against the Pirates. And on September 10th, he gave up three runs in seven innings against the Dodgers. Shota has not faced the A's, and none of the A's hitters have seen him. Shota's 5-2 at Wrigley and 9-1 at night, so that's good.
Yeah, that looks pretty pretty promising. How about for the A's?
Joey Estes is 7-7 with a 4.36 ERA in 22 games. 21 of those were starts, 88 strikeouts, 117 and two-thirds innings pitch. Last season, Estes started two games, but this is his first full season as he was called up on May 11th and has been in the rotation ever since. Interesting split here. Estes is 4-2 with a 2.74 ERA at home, but on the road, he is 3-5 with a 6.18 ERA. Joey has never faced the Cubs, and the only Cub batter who has seen him is Isak Paredes, who went 0-1. Estes features a four-seam fastball, sweeper, slider, and changeup. I do not know if he is the child of Sean Estes.
Game two, also under the lights, Jordan Wicks throws.
Jordan Wicks versus Mitch Spence. Wicks is 2-3 with a 5.27 ERA in 10 games, nine of those starts, 38 strikeouts and 41 innings pitched. Wicks has made three starts since coming off the IL. One was good, one was okay, one was awful. On September 4th, he gave up one run in five innings pitched. On September 6th, he gave up three runs in five innings against the Yankees. Then on September 11th, he gave up seven runs in three innings, including four home runs in one inning. Jordan has never faced the A's, and none of the Oakland hitters have seen him. Speaking of, Mitch Spence is a 26-year-old right-handed rookie in his first full season MLB. He is 7-9 with a 4.33 ERA in 32 games. 21 of those were starts with 113 strikeouts in 137 and a third innings pitched. His first start was on May 17th. He's been a starter ever since. Three starts ago against Texas, he gave up two runs in five innings pitched. Against Detroit on September 6th, he gave up one run in four and a third innings. He had a really good start on September 12th, his last time out, giving up two runs in seventh innings. But Spence has never faced the Cubs. Christian Bethencourt is 2-3 against him, and Paredes 0-1. Spence throws a cutter, a slider, a sinker, and a curveball.
All right, game three is an afternoon affair, and at this moment, the Cubs have not named a starter because it might be Justin Steele.
Yep, TBD. All signs point to Justin Steele making that start. We're going to go Steele's 5-5 with a 3.09 ERA in 22 games started with 131 strikeouts in 128 innings pitch. Justin has been on the IL since September 1st with left elbow tendonitis. On August 17th against the Blue Jays, he only pitched two innings because of rain delays. On August 22nd, he gave up two runs in seven innings against the Tigers. And on August 27th, he gave up two runs in five innings against the Pirates. That's the one we said, you know, where they jumped out, you know, before the fifth inning and Steele kind of shoot him back into the dugout. That was the last game he pitched. So Justin is 1-0 lifetime against the A's. He started against them last season. He has a 1.50 ERA. Shea Langeliers is 0-3 against Justin, and J.J. Bleday is 1-2, and Brent Rooker is 1-1. Brady Basso is 1-0 with a 1.23 ERA in five games. Two of those were starts with 11 strikeouts and 14 and two-thirds innings. This is the third rookie the Cubs are going to see in this series. Basso has been up and down with the A's and their AAA affiliate, mostly as a reliever. This will be his sixth game and his third start. His first was against Detroit. He pitched six shutout innings. And in his next start against the White Sox on Friday, he pitched 5 1/3 shutout innings. So Basso has never faced the Cubs. No Cub visitors have seen him, but he's had two really good starts. Basso features a fastball, a curveball, a cutter, and a changeup.
All right, who's hot and who is not? Michael Busch, red hot. We know that.
Yeah, Michael Busch is red hot. He is 8-18 with two home runs and eight RBIs. He's hitting 444 in the last week. Cody Bellinger right behind him, 8 for his last 20 with 3 home runs and 9 RBIs. He's hitting 400. And Seiya Suzuki, 8 for 23 with 1 home run and 3 RBIs. He's hitting 348. Unfortunately, on the not side, Dustin, a couple names we keep repeating.
Yeah.
Dansby Swanson, 4 for 22. He's hitting 182 in the last week. And Miguel Amaya is 1 for 10, hitting 100 in the last week.
All right, so who are some A's to watch out for when they have the bat in the hand?
J.J. Bleday, 8 for his last 22. He's hitting 364 in the last week. Zach Geloff is 9 for his last 25 with a home run and 3 RBIs. He's hitting 360 in the last week. And look out for left fielder Brent Rooker, 9 for his last 27 with 2 home runs and 8 RBIs, hitting 333 in the last week.
And the A's, knots?
Shea Langelier, 2 for his last 16. He's hitting 125. And then left fielder Seth Brown is 2 for his last 22. He's hitting .091.
All right, it is prediction time. I'll go first. I'm going to keep hope alive. I say sweep, sweep, sweep.
I am not going to say sweep. I think Cubs take game one. I'll go Cubs. Boy, I'm not really high on Jordan Wicks. I'm going to go with the Cubs.
But you're high on the A's? I mean, come on.
I'm just telling you, the Cubs' home record is really bizarre, and their offense at home has been bad. You got a bunch of rookie pitchers. And what are the A's playing for, Dustin? What do they got to lose?
Yep.
Nothing. So I think the Cubs
they just lost 2 out of 3 to the White Sox. Come on.
I'm going to go Cubs take 2 out of 3. How's that?
All right, fine. I got a sweep. Crawley's got 2 out of 3, and that's a wrap. Don't forget to listen, download, review, and subscribe to the Fly the W podcast. Follow on all the socials, Facebook, Instagram. Of course, we're on Twitter. Email us, flythew670@gmail.com, and you can watch us, as we told you, by subscribing to the 670 The Score YouTube channel. Crawley, enjoy what is left of your Sunday. I've got Bears duty coming up, and have a great start to your week, all right?
You too, and hopefully, like I said, the Northsiders can come out and really take all 3 from the A's and get our hopes back up again. Go Cubs!
It's all over.